Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to a special edition of ScaryCast and SprucePine.org. This is Dr. John. Glad to be with you tonight. It's a dark and rainy night here in Myrtle Beach, but it's beautiful, starry, and wonderful somewhere. And that ties into our guest tonight. We'd like to welcome to ScaryCast and SprucePine.org, astronomer Eric Colley. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, John. It's great to be here.
Oh, we're glad to have you here. So that everyone knows, Eric contacted me about bringing his telescopes to the South Carolina Lizard Man Festival. That was a couple of weekends ago. And we started talking and found out I was a lot of an astronomy geek, just like he is, but he's on a much larger scale. You can add telescopes and binoculars and all that stuff, what Eric does. But he came out to the Lizard Man Festival, brought his dad, which was great. They put up a tent. They had a solar, I'll let him explain how the solar telescope worked that he had set up. And people flocked to his tent to see the sun during, I think it was June 1st in Bishopville, South Carolina, at South Carolina Button Music. We had a great time. I got to look at the sun, and I think the night before on Friday night, Eric and his dad stayed out till kind of late looking at some of the stars and the planets and other kinds of great, great things that you can see in the sky. So, Eric, tell us a little bit about what you were doing at Lizard Man, because I think just what you were doing, looking at the sun, looking at the stars, people don't really know what astronomers do. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So at Lizard Man, we did set up for solar astronomy. And as most people should know, you should never look at the sun directly without special equipment. And that's just something a lot of people don't ever have an opportunity to have access to. And so, we set up the telescope to allow people to do that. The telescope I use just has what's called a white light filter over it. So it darkens the sun down enough to where it would be like what we could see with our eyes if we were safely able to look at the sun. And a lot of people don't ever really think about that unless there's something like an eclipse going on or, you know, something that kind of generates a little more interest to the public. But what a lot of people don't realize is there's something going on the sun every hour. There's something different. And whether it be sunspots or what they call prominences and things like that, there's always something exciting going on. So it gave people an opportunity. I had an 84-year-old gentleman that came out to the Lizard Man Festival out there. He had never looked through a telescope in his life. So even at 84 years old, he got to see the sun for the first time.
Yeah, I'm sure that was really exciting for him. I wanted to ask you a question. This just popped into my head. Now, when we had the total solar eclipse, I guess about 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago,
everybody. It was 2017.
Pardon?
I'm sorry. It was in 2017, so yeah, 2 years ago.
Okay. Everybody bought these little books at Barnes & Noble that had these glasses attached to them that you could use to look at the sun during the solar eclipse. Now, first of all, I'm not always convinced it's something you can buy for $6.99 going to protect you. But I was thinking about it when you said if you could see the sun without all that light, when you look at the sun, aren't you also getting a big dose of ultraviolet light coming into your eyes?
Yes, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. You know, especially when the eclipse came out a couple of years ago in 2017, there was a lot of hype about the glasses, and the glasses are safe for short-term use, the little paper glasses. They're fine for short-term, especially if they've got the approval. You know, they'll have a patent number on there and an approval from, and I'm sorry, the organization escapes my name now.
UL Underwriters Laboratory.
Yeah, well, there's one of them, and there's actually a solar astronomy society that also approves. Kind of, yeah, like I said, they're underwritten by that. And so that's okay, because believe it or not, it really doesn't take much to block the sun down enough to where it's safe. But what a lot of people, and I've talked to people about this before, you know, a lot of people, oh, I'll just use a welder's mask or, you know, something like that. And that's okay for short term, but not for long term because of the ultraviolet. Welder's masks are very dark because some of those welding arcs are actually brighter than the sun, you know, from what we see. They're even brighter, so they can knock down the light. But welding does not produce as much UV, if any, ultraviolet, you know. So you do have to be very careful in what you buy. And when you buy a specialized filter from a company, you know, there are quite a few of them out there that make specific filters for telescopes. They block not only the white light, but also the UV. They'll cut that down significantly. And they block the heat and everything as well. So you're perfectly safe to use these filters for however many hours a day that you want to keep them on there.
Okay. Well, now, there was another question that I had for you that regarded the solar eclipse. Now, down here in Myrtle mm-hmm. Beach, we ended up with the cloud cover. But it was that special kind of cloud cover that you can look up and easily see the sun. We could actually see the solar eclipse happening without glasses or anything. And that was through that particular cloud cover. Now, I guess I've never thought about it, but in watching the sun through that cloud cover, we were still getting a pretty big dose of ultraviolet radiation, weren't we?
Yes, yeah. And you know, they always tell you never look at it directly, even on a cloudy day, because you can get burned, you know, by the sun, even on a cloudy day. And that happens a lot, even when there's not an eclipse. You know, people go out to the beach or wherever, and, oh, it's cloudy, I don't have to worry about it, and you end up getting sunburned. Now, for short-term, you know, looking, you know, I always tell people, better safe than sorry. You know, everybody's a little different, but our eyes are all susceptible to the same thing. So I always tell people, even if you think you can see the sun, you know, you can glance at it for a minute, and it might be okay, but it's never a good idea to play around, even if you think you know you're safe. Always take the proper precautions, especially during an eclipse, because once you hit totality like that, that's the brightest part of the sun that's going to be visible, and that's also the most dangerous part.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked that question, because next time we have a solar eclipse, I'm just going to get professional glasses, or maybe I'll just get you to come, and we can watch the solar eclipse through your telescope. That was a neat device you had. Can you tell us a little bit about what you had?
Sure. So the telescope itself, actually, I use it for nighttime astronomy primarily. Every telescope I have is designed for nighttime use. And to any listeners out there that may own telescopes of their own, you can buy filters to put over the telescope to use it to look at the sun. The filters are, like I said earlier, they're called a white light filter. And they go over the lens of the telescope, or what they call the aperture of the telescope. They go over the front part of the aperture there. And they make them in all sizes. So you can, if you've got a small little telescope, it's still not a problem. And they're very easy to use. You just snap it on over the front aperture of the telescope and use it as if you would during the nighttime. And it will cut down the sun's brightness so that you can view it through your telescope as if you were looking at any other star in the sky. And a lot of people forget, sometimes even I kind of forget, that our sun is just another star. You know, we call it the sun, but it's just another star like any other. We just happen to be really close to it. And so it's much, much brighter. So the equipment I had was actually a 11-inch telescope, 11-inch in diameter. And it was a what's called a model. It's a Schmidt-Cassegrain model. And it's a very common scope. 11 inches, you do not need that to look at the sun. You can get a tiny telescope to see the sun because, again, it's very close. I just use the 11-inch one because that's one I have a white light filter for, and it's very reliable. But I would recommend anybody who's getting into, you know, astronomy, if they want to look at the sun, you don't have to have a big telescope to do that. You could get one even 4.5 inches, even a little bit smaller than that, with a white light filter, and you'll be able to see it fine.
It was a lot of fun looking at the sun when you had your telescopes there at the Lizard Festival. And you also said that we'd hit a particular time where there was a minimum of sunspots. We didn't see one during those 2 days, but you, with just a white light filter, you can actually see sunspots, can't you?
Yes, you can. And actually, there had been a sunspot. We are at a solar minimum. And when I had previously set my telescope up a couple of weeks before the Lizard Band, there actually was a sunspot visible very in if you want to look at, think of the sun as a clock, it was in about the 1 o'clock position, right on the edge of the sun. So by the time Lizard Man came around, we had probably moved, you know, our orbit had moved us out of that field of view of that sunspot. But when there are sunspots visible, you can see them with a white light filter, because they're significantly cooler than the rest of the sun, so they're not emitting as much light. And so you will see the dark spots when they're visible, because they're part of the visible spectrum. Now, one thing I do want to clarify is you will not see, with a white light filter, you will not see what they call prominences. And prominences are the arcs. I'll call them an arc, whatever you want to call it. A lot of people call them solar flares. They're the flames that you see that shoot off from the sun. You see them in all the photographs and in the movies and that kind of thing. Those are called prominences. You can't see those with a white light filter because they're kind of outside of our normal visual range. There's too much light. You do need a specialized telescope to see those, but they are available. They're just a little bit more expensive. So I tell people, if you're looking to get into solar astronomy, start with a white light filter first, because you can get those for very inexpensive, and you can see sunspots and, you know, the shape, and I call it the texture of the sun. You know, you'll see the color, you'll see the sunspots and everything else as well. And for a lot of people, that's good enough, because, again, how often do we really get to see what the sun looks like? All we see when we go outside is brightness. We don't ever really get to see the shape of the sun.
Right. Now, you mentioned solar flares and prominences, and from what I understand, in 1859, a solar flare basically came in the direction of the Earth, and we had what was known as the Carrington event. Can you tell us, when a solar flare, you know, sends its energy directly to the Earth, can you describe a little bit about what's going to happen?
Sure. So what happens when a solar flare comes out is, I'll segue into this. We were talking about sunspots. A lot of times solar flares will come out from the sunspots. Not always, but they can. So if you see sunspots, chances are with the right telescope, you might catch a prominence or a solar flare. But what happened with, like, the Carrington event is the energy that came out of that blast, that flare, whatever you want to call it, hit Earth's atmosphere, and all the radiation excited the particles, you know, that the almost like the aurora. It's basically the same principle as the aurora borealis. It lit up the sky. And for people that, you know, are all into disaster movies and things like that, the sun can actually be very dangerous. I mean, we get burned by it all the time when we walk outside. You know, people get burned at the beach. We don't realize, yeah, it brings life to this planet, but a solar flare, or what they can call a coronal mass ejection, is very dangerous. There's radiation, heat, everything. And when you see these prominences, a lot of people don't realize the scale. When you look at a picture of a solar flare or a prominence, especially the ones that are in like a loop, they kind of loop around the sun, you'll see like a little horseshoe shape. You can fit 6 or 7 Earths inside of that loop in a lot of cases. So they're huge. They would just consume the planet. And so luckily with the Carrington event, we didn't get hit by it, because if we had gotten directly hit by it, we probably wouldn't be here talking right now. You know, there may not have been anything left on the planet. Yeah. So yeah, they can be very, very dangerous.
Yeah, well, I know that during the Carrington event, the entire electrical grid of Earth was consumed by that solar flare, that CME. And the entire electrical grid, it consisted of, at that time, the telegraph signals. I mean, the telegraph lines from one city to another. I know that those lines actually caught fire. They ended up burning down some of the small houses or some of the small shacks that they used for the telegraph stations. And it was an absolute mess. Now, you take a solar flare, which this is a CME, a coronal mass ejection, and that is going to do the same thing as what we call an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse attack, like if a rogue nation wanted to explode a device above us, it would generate an EMP attack. It's about the same thing that happens to the coronal mass ejection. The entire power grid is going to go. If it'll catch on fire, it'll be destroyed. And that would be the end of civilization as we know it.
Right, and especially today, because our dependency on electronics is, I mean, we're basically inseparable now. And if the right kind of, if the coronal mass ejection or whatever, you know, solar flare hit us at the right angle, it would toast everything from your cell phone out to our vehicles. You know, vehicles even, people don't think about how much electronics are in cars and aircraft and everything else now. You know, when the Carrington event happened, like you said, telegraph was pretty much the top of the line at the time. We were still using gas or, you know, lanterns and things like that in a lot of cases. And I remember reading about the event, and they said that the sky had gotten so bright that they could read without the help of their lamps. They could go outside and read the evening paper, and it was bright enough to do so without any kind of extra illumination. And that was some time ago. Now, if something like that were to happen, I mean, our hospitals, you know, everything would cease to function. Even if we survived as humans, as a species, like you said, we would pretty much almost be back to the Stone Age, because our world is so electronically connected now that it would probably be even more of a disaster.
Well, what's bad is that you take a hospital that has patients in intensive care, and they have gone to the trouble to install generators in case of emergencies, but those generators are going to be toast.
Right.
You know, if you're on all this oxygen and all these things that you can be on when you're in an intensive care unit, if a CME, a coronal mass ejection, or an EMP attack, because no matter where you are, power is gone. And that's why we have been lucky. I remember that last year I heard that a CME passed by the Earth quite close, and had we been 4 days ahead in our orbit, that would have hit us, and we would have had an EMP attack, and the entire world would have been destroyed. And that was like last year. And, you know, they don't talk about that thing because it panics people. But, you know, it can happen. And as an astronomer, I know that you're aware of these things, and I appreciate you talking about them with me tonight, because, you know, it's talk about these things. That's not fun to think about it actually happening, but to learn a lot and learn that we've got to do something. And I'm going to talk about this with you soon and see what kind of a program we could put together to help folks, because you really understand the gravity of a coronal mass ejection. You do. And we would be back to the Stone Age. I mean, you know, it's funny. They talk about North Korea being the hermit nation and the fact that they have no lights on at night. North Korea might fare better than all of us.
Yeah, a lot of these other countries that have older aircraft and older automobiles and things like that probably would fare a little bit better than we would, especially even if we didn't get hit head on. And you hear about it all the time too. When there are enough sunspots and solar activity during one of our solar maximums, things are a little better now. But back in, you know, even 15, 20 years ago and prior, those could interfere with radio communications and, you know, satellites and things like that. Our technology has advanced enough now to where they're shielded more or less, because when we're at like a solar maximum, the sunspots do generate a little more of the charges and flares and, you know, magnetic fields and everything. So, you know, you do kind of see, even now, you'll hear about on the news when we're at a solar maximum, oh, the sunspots disrupted this. Not so much common, not too common anymore, because our equipment is better and it's shielded to a degree, but you can't shield yourself from a direct hit like that. There's just, we don't have enough to do that. Yes, we've got some equipment here that's shielded for, you know, some small nuclear attacks, I imagine. But when you're talking the sun, that's billions of nuclear bombs going off every second, probably even hundreds of billions if you really want to break it down. There's no way you can protect from that. It's just too much. I mean, like I said, those prominences, the inside in between the arc of, you know, the top of the prominence down to the sun, you can fit Earths inside of that thing. There's just no way to shield against something like that if it were to hit us directly. And there'd be nothing we could do. That's the scary part there. We would know it's coming, and there's nothing we could do. Like you said, you know, you could be 4 days out. Well, you can't change the orbit of the Earth, so what are you going to do? And another thing that thankfully hasn't happened, at least in our recorded history, is coronal mass ejections, or, you know, those from other stars, because they can travel through space and hit objects along the way, our sun included. You know, that coronal mass ejection that came out a while back, the radiation and everything could still be going out there in space somewhere. And there's no way to really track those. We captured one, astronomers captured one, I think it might have been in 2015 or 2016, where it was bright enough to see this kind of supernova. It was in a whole other galaxy, and they were able to see this supernova explode and send out all the energy and everything. That's how bright it was. It was brighter than the entire galaxy that it was in. And, of course, it happened millions of years ago, and we're just now seeing it. But you can't imagine the kind of power behind that. To have a single star explode brighter than the entire galaxy that it's in, that's a lot of power. People just don't realize how powerful even our sun is. And our sun is considered kind of an average star. It's really not that big. It's not that hot compared to a lot of other stars out there, and it could still do a lot of damage.
Wow, that is amazing. That's good to know. And people need to think about that in terms of emergency management and disaster preparedness. I hope I got that right. So anyway, that's a great thing to think about, and for us to know and try to be prepared. I want to switch the topic to something I know you like the night. You got a thing for the night sky, don't you, Eric?
Yeah. The night sky is my home. I do a little bit of solar astronomy, but I love the nighttime.
Exactly. Now, this weekend, I'm going to be up at the Space NC Expo, the Spruce Pine Alien Conference and Expo in Spruce Pine, North Carolina, and that is going to be the home of Mount Mitchell, the highest peak on the East Coast. Beautiful, beautiful. I grew up somewhat in the shadow of Mount Mitchell, and just so glad that I was invited to be a speaker. Mike Barra from Ancient Aliens will be there. He's a guest speaker as well. In fact, Mike and I are on a panel, and I will have my new book there called Look. Well, let's see. Should I go ahead and share it with you? Sure. Look up in the sky. What movie does that remind you of, Eric?
Oh, that's Superman.
Well, that's the name.
At least that's what I think of, yeah.
That's right. Look, up in the sky, and that's what the whole point is. The book, the subtitle is Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies. And, you know, there are a lot of interesting things in the nighttime sky. Now, I'm going to ask you a little bit about what we expect to see, but I wanted to, you and I had a neat conversation a couple of days ago. I said, you know, if I wanted to look for UFOs, I would get a telescope, right? tell everybody
no.
your advice. It was super interesting. Yes.
Right, yeah. We initially, you had asked about a telescope, and a lot of people have that misconception, even if they're not necessarily looking for UFOs. If they just want to study the night sky, they get a telescope, and they point it somewhere in the sky, and they might see two or three stars inside of there, just in a random location. And that's fine and all, but what people don't realize, when you look at something through a telescope, you're looking at a very, very, very small area of the sky. You know, every telescope's a little different. Every eyepiece is a little different. But they all tell you what they call their field of view. And most of the time, it's never more, if you want to kind of give it an equivalent, it's never more than, say, about a thumbtack size area of the sky that your scope is actually looking at. So to catch something in that field of view is very difficult. I get people all the time asking me, have you ever seen a meteor through there? Have you ever seen a, you know, whatever go through there? I have never seen a meteor go through my telescope. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't happen. You know, people could have their scope pointed at the right part of the sky, and it'll be like winning the lottery. But the chances of a meteor crossing in front of my field of view with a telescope is extremely rare. So same with a UFO or even an object that we know, a satellite or whatever, it's going to be very hard. So I tell people, if you want to see more of the night sky, start out with a good pair of binoculars, because they provide you a much wider field of view, and you can see a whole lot more in one glance or one look than you can with a telescope.
Right, and so that was good advice. I mean, I was getting ready to go buy a telescope, and he said, no, John, buy a good pair of binoculars. Go to your local major retailer / discount store, Walmart, or go to a sporting goods store or a hunting store, and they'll have some great binoculars for you, under $100, right?
Oh, sure, yeah, and that's another thing, another misconception people have is they think you have to have a lot of money to get into astronomy, even at a hobby level. And you really don't. Now, there is no upper limit on how much you can spend. I mean, you can spend thousands on telescopes if you prefer. But I tell people all the time, there is something for everybody's price level in studying the night sky. A good pair, yes, you can get some binoculars that will run you $500, $600, and they're great binoculars. They're big. They're, you know, they'll show you all kinds of things. But a lot of people out there don't want to throw that kind of money around. So, yeah, the pair that I own, or one of the pairs I own, I picked them up at Walmart. If I can use names, I'm sorry, I didn't think about that.
Okay.
Yeah, any retail store, any hunting store, sporting store, you know, a lot of people use binoculars for terrestrial. They like to watch birds. They watch wildlife. They're out there on their boat, and they want to make sure that there's nothing out there in the water, or, you know, things like that. Those will work just fine for the night sky. You'd be amazed what you can see with even a very basic pair of binoculars. It all kind of depends on the person, but I get a lot of compliments, and other people that I do astronomy outreach with that own binoculars, people love the binoculars because you can see hundreds of stars through the binoculars. And you can see satellites crossing. Now, you don't actually see the satellite. You just see the point of light moving across the sky. But it's easier to follow that point of light. You can follow an airplane, whatever. And if you see something, you don't know what it is. Most people who have seen unknown objects, when they're out with their equipment, it's through their binoculars. It's usually not through their telescope because, again, the field of view is so narrow that the chances of catching anything in there is very, very small.
Okay. All right, now here comes the big question for Eric tonight. Have you ever seen a UFO?
You know, I can answer that two different ways. I have a funny story, and then I have a true, you know, one that did happen. Well, they both happened. One of them is funny. One of them is I don't know the answer to. So which one would you like to hear?
I'd like to hear both of them. Start with the serious one first, then we'll close with the funny. I like that.
Okay. Okay, so the serious one happened. The closest thing, now I've seen a few things, you know, I look at the night sky a lot, and of course UFOs are out all the time, you know, people see them a lot, actually a lot more in daytime than I think they do night, because not everybody looks up at night, not everybody's outside at night, you know, things like that. But I've gotten pretty comfortable looking at the night sky and knowing, okay, that's a satellite, that's an airplane, that's a that's the space station, you know, because now we have that orbiting the Earth. In fact, the space station, I don't remember if you were at Lizard Man or not, but the space station actually came over. Well, if you were out there when it came over, it actually came over while we had the telescope set up at night. And a couple of people got to see it, not through the telescope, but I pointed it out to them, and we got to watch it go across the sky. So when you get comfortable and know what these things look like, you okay, that's not a UFO, it's a satellite, or it's an airplane, or it's a space station. But I did have an incident happen back in my hometown. I was going to my friend's house. We lived on a very short street. I lived in about the middle of the street. He lived about four houses down at the end of the street, kind of across. He was like right at the intersection. And I was probably about 10 or 11 years old. I was already into the astronomy pretty heavy even then. And I was running to his house to go hang out with him. And I always look up. Every time I go outside, I look up. And I have a bad tendency to even look up as I'm walking because I just want to see what's up there. You never know. And I happened to be kind of jogging, and I looked up, and there was about six red lights. I can still see it in my mind. There was about six red lights that were all moving in unison. And at first I thought, well, it's some airplanes. We lived near Fort Bragg, so yeah, airplanes and military craft were always flying over, no big deal. But what caught my eye was I could not see the stars behind them. So whatever these six lights were, it was solid in between them. It was all black.
Oh,
and
wow.
I remember,
you saw what we call a giant UFO.
It seemed pretty big. Unfortunately, I didn't get a whole lot of time to study it because I was jogging. I looked up. I saw the lights. They were moving in the opposite direction of me. So I was going one way. They were going the other. There was no light behind it. It, you know, so that told me it was a solid object. And I remember thinking, boy, that's a big, whatever that is, it's huge. It's got to be huge to have these five or six lights all moving in unison, blocking out the stars behind it. And as I was contemplating that, I started to stop to study it more, and a car horn blew. It scared me, you know, I about jumped out of my skin. I had gotten so distracted looking at that thing while I was jogging, I had run right out into an intersection. Thank goodness we lived in a small town, and it was getting dark, so there wasn't a whole lot of traffic, but I almost ran right out in front of a car because that thing distracted me that much. And, of course, by the time I apologized to the driver and got out of the road, whatever it was long gone. And the other thing that caught my eye, or caught my ears, if you want to say that, was that it did not make a sound. There was no sound, at least none that I could hear. And for something that big, you would think, you know, we'd had C-130s fly over, we'd have, you know, planes fly over. You hear those things miles, you know, they're so loud. This thing made no sound. And to this day, unfortunately, that's the only thing that I've seen that really, I don't know what it was. And I hate that it distracted me so much I ran out into the intersection because I was actually getting ready to stop and stand on the side of the road and watch it to see if I could figure out what it was. But then the car horn blew. I looked like a fool out in the middle of the road, and I had to get out of the way. So that, you know, that tells you, people, when they see these things, it takes them totally by surprise. I mean, the last thing I was thinking about was cars coming and running out into the intersection. Again, thank God I wasn't hit or anything. But when you're not expecting to see something like that, that's why I say all the time, a lot of people who see UFOs aren't looking for them. And it just catches you by surprise. That's why people are like, well, why didn't you take a picture? Why wasn't somebody else with you? I was just running to visit my friend. So who knows? If I had been out there 5 minutes later, I could have missed this thing. I wasn't looking for a big red, five, six red lights in the sky. I was just going to my buddy's house. So that's when it happens. And, of course, I didn't have a camera. You know, that was the last thing on my mind was to see that and run out in the middle of the road. So that's my one story of seeing a UFO. Unfortunately, I have never seen one through my telescopes or binoculars or anything like that. But I will share a quick funny story. When I was very young and I got my first telescope, I was learning the night sky. And I took my telescope outside and had to align what they call the finder scope or the spotter scope. So I picked a bright star. They tell you, you know, if you're outside at night, find a street light or find a bright star and line your finder scope up on that. And then find it in the telescope and, you know, line it up and everything. So I found this bright star. I thought, okay, this will work really well. So I pointed my scope at it, lined the finder scope, got it all calibrated. Looked through the eyepiece of the telescope, and there's the object. Well, when you look at a star through a telescope, it looks like a small point of light. Even through a telescope, it looks just like it does with your eyes. It's just brighter, and you see more of them. But you don't actually, okay. Unlike when we looked at the sun at Lizard Man, you could see the round shape and everything because the sun is very close. The stars that you look at are very far away. You're not going to see the shape of them. You're just going to see the light they emit. So they're going to look like little pinpoints just all over the sky. But when you look at a planet or some other object, they'll have a shape to them. So I looked through this very bright star, or, you know, I pointed my scope at what I thought was this very bright star, looked down through the telescope, well, there's a shape to it. I thought, okay, it's a planet. My telescope was really out of focus. So as I started to focus it, it took on a saucer shape. And for about 5 seconds, I thought, oh, my gosh, it's a ship out there. It's a classic flying saucer. It looked just like a flying saucer. And I kind of jumped as I'm focusing. I'm thinking, it's a UFO. It's hovering. It's sitting there and whatever. As I brought it into focus more, it was the planet Saturn. And so I was probably about 8 years old, and that's my first experience seeing the planet Saturn, and also the first time I ever thought that I had seen a UFO, because everybody knows Saturn's got rings. And when you focus it, when it's out of focus, especially to an 8-year-old kid, it's going to look like a UFO. And so for about 5 seconds until I brought it into focus, I thought I had a UFO in there. So that's kind of my funny story about a UFO and also seeing the planet Saturn through my telescope for the first time.
Well, that's not a bad story. It just goes to a lot of surprises in the night sky. Get your pair of binoculars under $100 at Walmart or Cabela's or Gander Outdoor or whatever, and get to looking up at the nighttime sky, because you have the hope. We have the whole world down here, Eric, but we got a whole world up there, don't we?
That's right. And, again, to the average person, Saturn is out there. Well, it's not out right now. It actually will be out a little bit in a couple hours. It'll be up in the sky. Jupiter is out. Very, very bright. Jupiter is at its opposition right now, so it's actually at its brightest. It's going to be brighter than any star in the sky right now. So if you go outside and you look towards the east, and you see a very bright gold star, and that's the planet Jupiter. As the night goes on, of course, it gets higher in the sky. So, yeah, there are things out there people don't realize. Even the planets, they're right in our solar system, but they look just like a star to somebody who doesn't know. And as a young kid, Saturn looked just like another star to me until I put my telescope on it, and then, bam, there it is. And from that point on, I always know what Saturn looks like. I can see it when it comes up. I know exactly what it looks like. And once you learn that, people always ask, how do you learn? How do you know? The night sky is a map. And once you learn what these things look like, even without a telescope, you can learn what Jupiter looks like, what Saturn looks like, what Mars looks like. You learn the color. You learn the time that they come out. Yeah, and like you said, it's a whole – there are things up there right now as you and I are talking – that are just absolutely gorgeous and mysterious. And the fascinating thing about a lot of it is it's even a lot of it is in our own galaxy. I mean, just about everything we see with our eyes when we look up at the sky is our own galaxy. And we don't even see a tenth of that. There's just so much out there. That's why for me, astronomy is a lifelong thing. You'll never see it all. There's always something to find.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's so interesting. One of these nights, I'm going to contact you, and we're going to do an overnight on a mountain or somewhere with good viewing. And you can teach me a lot about this, and we'll tell more people. I think it's fascinating, and I know people have enjoyed it. We're running out of time here, but thank you, Eric. It's been wonderful having you. You did a great job talking at Lizard Man Festival about these very same things, and I'm going to have you back on here because, I mean, I think people are interested. And so, first of all, we really do appreciate having you here. And I will get up with you soon, and we'll go do some night sky viewing. How does that sound?
That sounds great. And to everybody out there listening, if the night sky is something you've been interested in, you're at a perfect opportunity in our technology to get you something very inexpensive that anybody, even children, can use. And take advantage of it, because those objects are out there. They're waiting for everybody to look at them. I always say they'll be there long before you were here. They'll be there long after. So there's plenty of time to see it. And it's great entertainment and no cost. Once you buy the equipment, you go out there anytime, no cost at all.
Wow, that sounds great. A free evening of fun. And so that's good. Well, look, Eric, thanks a lot. Folks, this has been Eric Colley. He's an astronomer from the greater Charlotte area. He's in the Lizard Man. He's coming to the Cherokee Comic-Con. He's coming to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference and wherever else, wrangling to come bring his telescopes and show us more about the sun and the night. Thanks a lot. It's been good having you. We'll be back again next week. We'll be back split again. We'll have our SprucePine.org podcast on Tuesday night, and then we'll have a scary cast 11 p.m. next Thursday night. And we'll, of course, have a wrap-up of the Space Expo on ScaryCast. So, look, thanks, everyone, for listening. This is Dr. John with ScaryCast and SprucePine.org. I'll see everybody this weekend at the Space Expo in Spruce Pine. Eric, we'll see you soon. Take care.
Thank you so much, John. It's been a pleasure.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.